Did you see this poll? Wow. Ron DeSantis has his work cut out for him. It's pretty remarkable. The latest, according to this Yahoo YouGov poll, shows it's going to be Trump. It looks that way at least now. Look, anything can happen in politics, but we're going to talk about that poll. We're going to talk about even more changes, if you can imagine, coming to none other than Fox News. Fox News, which is sort of struggling, shall we say, at the moment. More shows are being axed. And then you have the Bud Light situation, which continues to grow worse by the day. Now, the former head of marketing is making a comment. Well, sort of. I will explain. And did you know that Lori Lightfoot, the former mayor of Chicago, she's heading to Harvard to teach at the public policy school. How do you like that? I mean, like, Chicago was just the gold standard, right? When it came to the whole March 2020 shutdown situation. Anyway, we're going to get into all of this. It's so good to have you all here. Welcome to all of you. Some of you have been asking a little bit about my dog. Thank you for that. Fluffy is doing quite well. I appreciate you asking. This is a live program, so I'm watching all of your comments as they come in. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure you come over to the YouTube channel. We're here every day, and it's a chance for us to interact, to speak live with each other, for me to look at your comments, answer your questions, and for all of us to sort of get together. So again, very, very good to have you all here. This is the Trish Regan Show. We are brought to you in part, as always, by LegacyPMInvestments.com. If you're interested in investing in gold or investing in silver, do go and check them out, LegacyPMInvestments.com. You can call them at 1-866-589-0560. All right, so let's start on this poll, because there was a lot of sort of pressure and expectation, shall we say, on Ron DeSantis as he came out with his big announcement on Twitter. You remember that the other night? We were actually here live, and so many of you joined me for that as we streamed that event live. Very cool, very interesting. I give both Elon and Ron credit for that one. However, it didn't quite have perhaps the bang or the whiz that, well, that time going down the escalator at Trump Tower did, right? Shall we say? So he's not pulling ahead. In fact, when you look at these new numbers now, and look, you know, there's a margin of error, of course, and polls are just polls. But when you look at these numbers, it's a survey of 1,520 U.S. adults that are registered Republicans. What you actually find is that he's losing ground, which is sort of shocking, right? Like, when somebody comes out and declares their candidacy, usually they get a bump. You don't usually see them go down. But Ron DeSantis is going down, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I'll start with Trump. Trump was at 48% back in early May. That was around the time when they came out and they arrested him, et cetera. And he had seen a little bit of a bump, remember, because of that? Well, you would think that Ron DeSantis, with his PR blitz, sort of, on Twitter and elsewhere, would have also gotten a bump. But instead, that's not actually the case. Trump is now at 53%. So he's climbed from 48% to 53%. I'm going to get into the reasons why I believe, anyway, that is actually happening. DeSantis now lags further behind than he did just a few weeks ago. He's at 25% right now, down from 28% in early May. So in other words, DeSantis, he had been trailing, what, by 20 points or something in the previous Yahoo News YouGov poll. And today, he's trailing by 28 points. Wow. So why would this be? Oh, by the way, you know, the other candidates, I should just point out, there's seven that have officially said that they are running, including Nikki Haley. You get Asa Hutchinson. You've got South Carolina's Senator Tim Scott. Vivek Ramaswamy, who was on the show the other day. Larry Elder, also on the show the other day. None of them are really, you know, really resulting in much here. In fact, Nikki Haley is around 3%. Same with Vivek, by the way, which I give him credit for because he just came on the scene, like literally. Tim Scott, the senator there from South Carolina, coming in at 3%. Asa Hutchinson at 1%, and Larry Elder, my friend Larry, at 1%. But what's also interesting, and I'll just give you some more numbers, is if you look at a hypothetical two-way matchup, it's really no better for DeSantis. Trump still leads him at 55% to 31%. And again, this is up from 50% to 36% in early May. So you got to ask the question, like, are Americans seeing DeSantis and now saying, oh, gee, you know, he's not quite what I thought? Maybe they had some kind of romanticized version of him prior to this, and the je ne sais quoi is not quite there, as we say. I think, on the one hand, we could blame the media, right? The media does not want DeSantis to win because they actually see that as more of a threat than should Donald Trump win. Don't forget, like, everybody's going after Trump with everything they got. You saw Mike Pence, that just came out, breaking just a little while ago. They are not going to actually charge him with a crime for having had some documents that were classified in his possession. But, you know, Trump, it's full steam ahead on every single angle. We spoke recently with Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz, about this. He's got a new book out called Get Trump, aptly named, I guess. And he's someone who's actually voted for Democrats his entire life. But he's like, you know what? This is crazy. This is kind of a violation of one's constitutional rights. And so he's been very outspoken about the aggression by which big government is going after Donald Trump. So you have the media, meanwhile, saying, okay, well, let's go after DeSantis. On The View recently, they were just attacking him. They don't even want to say his name. You get the NAACP saying, don't go to Florida. Florida is a bad place, a travel warning, as though they're the State Department. Don't go to Florida. Hey, go to Chicago anytime you want. Forget about Florida. So you have a bias out there that is tilted towards actually wanting, believe it or not, wanting Trump to win the nomination, because the media is hopeful that that means it's game over and you're going to see a repeat of what we saw before in 2020. What I would just caution them is that you really shouldn't count them out ever, and you should never take anything entirely for granted. That's exactly what went wrong, shall we say, in 2016. They, again, wanted him to win because they thought he was the most beatable. They just didn't realize how unappealing Hillary Clinton was and is. And perhaps what they're forgetting here is what America has been through with Joe Biden. And Americans are seeing the devastation there in Ukraine and what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. They're looking at the border situation saying, what the heck? They're looking at our economy where, you know, I told you the other day I paid $8. Actually didn't pay it. I refused to pay it. I nearly paid $8. We're at the checkout of the grocery store. I'm like, you're going to be kidding me. For a dozen eggs. No, I don't think so. So the inflation is rampant. And though we did get a good jobs report today, I mean, somewhere approaching 400,000, it was over 300, I think it was 339,000 new jobs that were added to the economy. We'll see how it all shakes out in the end because, you know, they get revisions after revisions. I would just say you need between 300,000 and 400,000 jobs being added to the economy every single solitary month in order to just keep up with population growth and new people coming into the workforce space. So yeah, you know, let's be happy about it, but let's not figure we're out of the woods yet. I don't think we are. You get a Federal Reserve that likely is going to continue on the path it's chosen, whereby it is not going to raise rates anymore. In fact, there's a lot of talk about the Fed actually cutting rates because we're going into an election and they want to make sure that the economy is well oiled. Well, that will eventually result in more inflation too. So you have all of these situations at play at present right now. And Americans are looking at Joe Biden. And I'm sorry, I know we're not supposed to show this. You know, we have to though, because it's Joe Biden, of course, falling at the Air Force Academy's graduation. One of you wrote in a very clever comment, and I hear you. You said, well, at least he had a good landing. A sort of a play on the Air Force Academy there. But it's hard to see this stuff. It's disappointing to see this stuff. But I think it's a reminder of the fragility, if you would, of this particular candidate in that, hey, anybody can fall. But when you fall and you're 80 years old, it does cause everybody to sort of gasp, at least for just a moment. Watch. Right. So there's that. And not only did he fall there, but he then hit his head like just moments later. I mean, I give him credit. He, you know, was thumbs up. He's doing fine now. And the White House issued a statement. He's totally fine. And he kind of laughed it off to reporters. And look, it can happen to anyone. In fact, Donald Trump did a town hall with Hannity over on Fox. We're going to get to Fox in just a second. And was actually pretty diplomatic about it. And I suspect if you see more of that, because he has moments, right, when he can be incredibly empathetic. And he sort of said, look, it's hard. You know, I've nearly fallen too. I get it. You know, I'll tell you, those guys aren't in high heels, though. You want to know it's hard standing up there in high heels with the stairs, you know? At least they're not that challenged. Hey, who knows at this rate? Maybe one of these days we will get a president who's a biological man up there on stage in high heels. Oh, gosh, I digress. But anyway, you have a moment now where the media would like to see Donald Trump win. I will be curious to see how that plays out. I think ultimately whoever runs on the Republican ticket is a fantastic option against the current administration, because the current administration has made some very poor policy choices and I think will continue to make incredibly poor policy choices that will put us at a disadvantage both from an economic standpoint and also from a national security standpoint. And also, I will point this out, from a freedom standpoint. Right. Because, you know, if we have to hear how we're all half the country, if you voted for Republicans, you're suddenly a threat. Enough already. Right. Like that's actually starting to really and truly encroach on our freedoms in ways that I don't think people might have certainly ever expected of the U.S. government. I mean, look, it's happened before. Just go back to the 60s and McCarthyism and all that good stuff. And so as you look at these two candidates, I'm curious to see what you guys are thinking on all of this. But I see problems ahead for Ron DeSantis. I've seen this actually from the beginning. Look, I'm not going to doubt that he's a smart guy. I'm sure he absolutely is. And he's got a fantastic pedigree on the educational front. He is Harvard, Yale, there you go, establishment, right? Well, you know, Trump went to UPenn, to Wharton. Look, he was at Harvard and Yale, and he was a baseball player, so he's an athlete. I think he's got a lot of things going for him. And my only challenge with him, and I say this about anybody who's spent an entire career in politics, is that they've spent their entire career in politics. And so it's hard, at least for me, to see, like, okay, are they going to come at it from a different angle? The angle he has been approaching this primary has been basically, okay, let me be Trump 2.0. You can't be Trump 2.0, really and truly. Like, I just need to make that very clear. Like, there was one Donald Trump, and you can't really copy that. It doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't seem genuine. He doesn't have the sense of humor. He doesn't have the, you know, occasional moment of empathy. And so it just comes across, dare I even say, and for anybody who's a DeSantis fan out there, I'm saying this for his own good, because he needs to understand where his weaknesses are. He doesn't come across as likable, right? And even when Trump annoys people and they can't stand him, those that do like him really love him. And I don't know if Ron DeSantis is going to be able to inspire that same kind of loyalty. And so consequently, he's out there, and I suspect will ultimately become, look, I could be wrong, anything could happen in politics, we'll see, you know, it's a day-by-day, hour-by-hour situation, but I suspect he's going to be a little bit of a sacrificial lamb, because he's going to lose the base of the party, which maybe he could have kept if he had just sort of stayed the course and said, let me finish out as the governor of Florida, let me do everything I can to win all that I can for Florida and to see the economic success of that state through. And then in 28, when Trump most likely would not run again, then I come forward. And maybe I even sort of get an anointment from him, right? Like, he could be the kingmaker, if you would. Donald Trump could say, you know what? I'm going with Ron DeSantis. And so it's a little bit of a, he's rushing. Maybe he doesn't want to have that Chris Christie moment. Remember when Chris Christie could have won, should have run, and didn't, and he waited, and he kind of missed his time. I don't think that Ron DeSantis would have missed his time. I think that the logical, sort of smart, methodical move would have been to wait until 28. But, you know, there's a lot of money out there, and there are a lot of people that would like to see an alternative to Donald Trump and feel strongly that that is the best possible position for the Republican Party, and thus are willing to put a ton of money behind him and his candidacy. And maybe they've made promises like, look, don't worry, Ron, we'll take care of you. If this doesn't work out, you know, you're still set. You have job security, financial security, whatever. I don't know what kind of deals they had to make, but I do think he's making a personal mistake. I mean, look, if you think Donald Trump is bad for the country and you want to run because of that, because you really do believe that you're the alternative, then I guess it's a good generous, kind of altruistic move, right? Because you're mixing it up and getting some new blood in there. The only thing is, he's not really mixing it up. I mean, everything that he says feels like it's just an echo of what Trump has said. And I think what differentiated Trump so much back in 2016 was that he had a different approach. He came at it from a business angle. I mean, he'd sit there. I remember watching O'Reilly and thinking, this is great. You know, he'd sit there and talk about trade deficits. And I'm like, wow, you know, you're speaking my language. I love talking trade deficits. But I hadn't seen candidates do that before because, you know, I don't think they understand trade deficits, number one, let alone will actually get on a cable TV show and talk about it. And it resonated with people because he didn't dumb it down. I mean, like, maybe sometimes, right? Like, let's be clear. Sometimes he kind of dumbs it down with all the nicknames and stuff. Although, again, that's just him. So that's why I just think he is incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult to beat. I'm not surprised by the latest poll. And for those of you that love DeSantis, it's tough to see someone get like so badly railroaded, which I think he will be. Again, like I said, anything could happen. And hey, you know, if the Democrats get their way, they're going to lock Donald Trump up forever, right? And we'll go full on banana republic. Anyway, I want to turn to this news coming out of Fox News and Fox Business. It seems they're not done just getting rid of the Tucker Show. They got more work to do. You know, they got an 800, I'm rounding up, million-dollar bill there to pay on the legal front, and they get more legal bills with, and that's just a settlement, by the way. That doesn't even include all their attorney fees, and then they got Smartmatic in the works. And so they're also struggling in this new media environment where people can go sort of anywhere, and they can listen to the channels that, hey, you guys are over here. And I've said before, we're a little audience, right? We're scrolling, though. Hey, have you seen? We're up to some 65,000 now, so thank you for that. Thank you, guys. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed, please do me that favor. Again, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, come and check us out, the Trish Regan channel, youtube.com/Trish Regan channel. You can also, if you're listening on YouTube, go over in your spare time, maybe when the show is over, go check out the podcast there on Apple and follow it. That's all you have to do. Follow it. It's all free. And if you would, leave a 5-star note. I always appreciate that. It's important, really, to get the word out. But my point is that Fox is in this really difficult sort of tunnel right now where it has to, you know, it can go one of two ways. And, well, actually, it really can't. It can't really take any turns, shall we say, because the media business it is in is, in fact, dying. It's like, you know, radio, and radio was replaced by television, and then you had television news. I've worked for some of those big evening news networks where it was like appointment TV at 6:30. You'd sit down and watch the news, and very artificial in that they're very canned. I've told you the story before about you better not go longer than 9 seconds. You have 9 seconds for your tag. I mean, if you lose your train of thought, like, it's game over, right? Because you can't even take a breath. You got 9 seconds. And you can't go a second over. Everything is so timed out. The prompter, which, by the way, I'm not reading a prompter right now. There's none of that. Like, this is just you and me. But the prompter itself actually times out exactly how everything is going to be, how long you have your set script, etc. So, you know, consequently, that got very outdated very fast by cable news. I remember first going to cable and being like, wow, this is like so liberating. Yes, you had scripted intros and this, that, and the other, but the interviews themselves were freeform. And, you know, maybe you'd only get 5 minutes because you gotta hit that commercial break, but still just having the liberty to speak even in those situations with that freeform felt very different. And now I'm here. Right. And it's all free form and there's no commercial breaks. You know, I'm sitting here drinking my water on set because, you know, occasionally you need to do that. I don't have a commercial break to do that in. Anyway, so it's a very, very different medium and one in which we can all speak together. And so Fox News doesn't have that option, only in that the way these cable agreements work with the AT&Ts or the DirecTVs of the world is that DirecTV will pay a certain fee in order to have Fox News or Fox Business in somebody's home or CNN. And so you can't, for competitive reasons, suddenly stream the exact same product for free online that you would be putting into somebody's home. And because these agreements are for, you know, for various years and they're very profitable still, cable companies are not about to go and stream all their content. So sometimes they'll, you know, hash it up after the fact and they'll put that out and they've gotten, I guess, the clearance to do so. But the reality is that the industry is changing so fast. And while they're trying to get into different businesses, and you see that, for example, with Fox Nation, trying to be in the streaming industry, it's still pretty tough for them. And I think it will continue to be tough. So anyway, to the changes there at Fox News, let's get to that, because indeed, there are more. Do you guys know Steve Hilton? Steve Hilton, you know, British accent. What a great show on Saturdays. I love Steve. I think he always came at things with just a very new, fresh kind of perspective. I mean, the English accent helps, right? And he was on alongside Bongino on Saturday nights. And so it had kind of a nice feel to it. I always liked that show. And yet that show is going bye-bye. And then you have Kennedy, Lisa Montgomery Kennedy is her full name. A very nice woman, witty, smart, great sense of humor, had kind of a, you know, different, right? Like different. And I think that Fox needed that because she sort of brought a different kind of edge, if you would, to their programming. And her show is going bye-bye as well. That's over on Fox Business, where I used to work. So it tells you something's up, right? They're getting rid of their opinionated commentators there on the weekends. And then they're downsizing over at Fox Business. They're going to put actually my former co-host, very smart guy, very worked on the economic team, actually in the Trump administration, would be Larry Kudlow. I co-hosted a show with him on CNBC for many years, and he's a brilliant guy. I like him very much. He does the 4 p.m. show on Fox Business. He's now going to do basically a repeat, right? So they're going to run the show at 7 o'clock again, which is a cost saver. I mean, hey, why not, right? You got the programming, just watch it again. And they must have made the decision that for whatever reason, the 7 o'clock ratings just weren't there enough to support the live show. So consequently, no more Kennedy, no more Steve Hilton. So the list just keeps growing. And they've made it very clear that they are going to make, or they have to, they haven't made it clear. I should actually be very cautious about saying that because Drudge made it clear. No one at Fox News has made it clear that there are any changes coming in prime time, just other than to say when the news broke there on Drudge, that Hannity would be moving to 8 and that Jesse would be moving to 9 and Greg Gutfeld would be moving to 10. And everybody said, well, what's going on with Laura? Like, what's happened to Laura Ingraham? And the message was from high on up, you know, Laura's a vital part of our company and she'll continue to play a big role. So that was a good endorsement, let me just say, for Laura Ingraham, because yours truly did not get an endorsement when there were rumors floated out there in the mainstream media. I wonder where the rumors came from. Anyway, so I'm happy that they're going to keep Laura on board. But Steve Hilton... Now, Dan Bongino, so Saturday nights, forget about it. They've got some like weekend programming. It's got some milquetoast title, and they're going to have prompter readers on, and nobody, I guess, is going to give any opinion. It's just going to be, okay, here's the news. And maybe that works for them. I don't know. I don't know what the thinking is. To me, you want to win, and the only way you win is with good talent. And if you can't manage your talent, well, then you need new management, right? I mean, the place actually worked really well for many years. And now all of a sudden, it's like all H-E-double-L keeps breaking loose, which really does call into question how they're managing the company. There's also another reporter. One of you guys mentioned that is leaving. So they're getting rid of another reporter. I mean, I'm just wondering, are they that hard up? Look, this company makes a ton of money. I've said that before, like they could go through the whole Dominion thing. It didn't really matter because they're making like a billion something a year. I mean, they're maybe more, maybe it's like 2 billion now. I don't know, but it was definitely a lot of zeros next to the revenue number. And I would also point out that all those evening news shows I mentioned earlier, you know, sure, they don't make what they used to, but there are ways to make businesses do more with less. And how do you do that? Cost cutting, right? This is what Google, otherwise known as Alphabet, recently did, because if you look at their earnings, it's like, wow, you know, they didn't have as much revenue, ad revenue coming in, and yet their earnings were still strong. How did they do that? Cost cutting. And so that may be part of what is going on. We also saw recently that they got rid of the investigative unit, or maybe shuffled people around to other positions there. It all suggests that they need to tighten the belt. And big ticket talent that was getting paid for certain shows, the question becomes, well, do they keep those salaries? Do they keep the big salaries, or do they get a smaller salary because now they're just a contributor? Do they keep them on as contributors just to avoid the legal mess that you might have if you just say, see ya? Because it is pay or play, don't forget, so many of these contracts. And so, oh, there's another one. The morning show, for those of you that may have watched it 4 or 5 in the morning, they get ruined one of those hours. So they're condensing what they're doing. They're having less live programming. And it strikes me as a cost-cutting kind of move, just looking at a company and perhaps some of the challenges that they're facing right now. Even though they do make a lot of money, they now have more expenses than maybe they might have had in the past. So yeah, lots of changes coming, but you know what? It's all good, right? We don't care. Let them do what they want over there. And I just love having you guys here in a direct relationship like this, because it is nice. If you haven't signed up for my email, go over to trishreganshow.com. Forgive the website. It is under works. So, but there is a little pop-up there. You can sign up for my email, and then we'll at least be able to stay in constant touch, because I'd like to be able to even just to email you guys and be like, hey, you know what? We're live today. It's great to have you all here. So let me turn to some of your comments before I get to some of these other questions right now, because we get a lot actually to cover today. I mean, I'm just looking at some of this ESG nonsense, which continues to pop up over and over again. We've got new comments there from Alicia Heinerschneid that we've got to get to, because the company's lost, what, $26 billion there? That would be Anheuser-Busch, the parent company of Bud Light. So they're continuing to struggle. You know, Target situation. I'm going to have to play you a clip again from that Target song. And I do want to get to some of these other things. For example, Ms. Lori Lightfoot heading to Harvard. Wow. So I guess she's not cancelable. And this AI stuff, gosh, I just worry. If Trump becomes the nominee, are they going to use this threat of AI really sort of destroying society to be able to go after some things via certain algorithms? I don't know, but we'll talk about all of that. But before we do, I want to just reach out to all you guys, because I love seeing your comments here, and I want to get to some of them. Mike, it's good to see you again. Yeah, of course, we're getting more debt. Are you kidding me? We're gonna be at $50 trillion. Now is my chance to get mad about it. Look. All right. We needed a debt deal. I'm just going to say that. You can accuse me of being establishment, whatever you want, but like, I don't want us to default on our debt. I know what that looks like. I've seen it many times in bad banana republic like countries, which I know we're like cruising there, but if we defaulted on the debt, like, it's a whole other game, right? So we can't default on our debt. But what's upsetting about this is that there really isn't a will or a way. I'm not exactly a big McCarthy fan, but I give him a lot of credit, because you had a president that was digging in his heels, absolutely didn't want to move on anything. And he actually was able to get a fair amount accomplished under the circumstances. So now, today, we need to sit there and say, okay, fine. All right. We avoided complete Armageddon, but how do we make sure that, like, we just don't keep adding and adding and adding and adding to our debt and deficits? Well, that means you actually have to cut spending, but you have no one there. And frankly, I'm going to be perfectly honest about this. Like, the Republicans are not so keen on cutting spending. I mean, they talk a good game, but when it really comes down to it, hey, you know, they get their pet projects too. Everybody's got a pet project. And so there's no incentive. There's like no carrot for them to actually stop spending. Seriously. I mean, like, they look at it's a no win for them, and they don't get the proper credit that they should from their constituents when they reduce spending. And so consequently, it just gets put on the back burner over and over again. I actually think this is why we need sort of this revival of the Tea Party. Remember the Tea Party? Let's demand more from our government and say, listen, we're not going to keep paying all these crazy taxes and all this crazy interest on our debt, because you guys can't manage this. You absolutely, I mean, nobody can add. Nobody can add in Washington, D.C., I will say that. I mean, none of them have a real background in economics. Jim Jordan does, actually. He was an economics major. I was kind of impressed to see that. And there's another guy down in Florida, actually, who was just on the program the other day. Very smart. He used to be a financial advisor, and he's in Congress, and he actually has a background in economics. But, like, you got to go looking. It's like a needle in a haystack to find anybody in Washington, D.C. that understands anything, right, about the markets. Anyway, again, going out to your comments here, Craig, I know you want the truth. I mean, you deserve the truth. The truth right now is increasingly difficult to find because they have one version of it. By they, I mean the establishment, by the left, by these people that are just indoctrinated into this wokeness. And it's amazing to me because they are so adamant about this stuff. I mean, remember during March 2020 and the aftermath of that and the insanity over the whole mask thing. And if you didn't wear your mask, like outside, you know, for a walk, you'd get dirty looks and people would, you know, get angry. And I do think that people got sort of desensitized and dehumanized, right? In a way, like there was a sense that people didn't, well, for first of all, you couldn't really see people, right? You couldn't see they were smiling. You couldn't really tell in their eyes. So that was odd. And there was just this anger that was underpinning everything. And the left, in my opinion, took that to the extreme. In other words, they used it as a kind of virtue signaling. So if you weren't wearing your mask outside on a windy day with no one nearby, they felt perfectly entitled to give you dirty looks and to maybe harass you or say something unpleasant. And that was fine, right? Because you must be a Trump supporter. Oh, you're that half of the country that we don't like. And so the whole idea of truth and what could be said actually became very much vulnerable in that you couldn't, I'll give you a quick story. I remember once seeing a study from Oxford University, I believe, yes, it was Oxford University, and it was on people that had suffered from strokes after having gotten the vaccine. A super, super, super minor portion of the population. Let me just say that before, you know, people come down on me. But anyway, so the study was there and it was on marketwatch.com, and a friend of mine actually wrote the story. I used to work at marketwatch.com, and so I happened to know, okay, that's the reporter. It's the Cambridge study. It's on this particular vaccine, et cetera. And it was up at the front page of the website. And I was a little concerned about it because I was having, you know, I had gotten the vaccine. I was having kind of a headache and some things that didn't feel entirely normal. So hypochondriac that I am, I'm not really, but I was just like, wow, that's quite an interesting story. So I went downstairs and I'm going to call my doctor and I tried to find the story again. And I went back to marketwatch.com and it wasn't there. It was not there. And so I typed in a few search things on Google News and MarketWatch and the vaccine, and it wasn't there. And so finally, like, because I happen to know the reporter's name and I happen to know what the study was, et cetera, I typed in enough search terms to actually eventually find it. But that kind of alarmed me. And that was just sort of in the very beginning, right? Like, and so you weren't allowed to even question. Now, look, I mean, how can you have truth eventually come out if you're not willing to explore these issues in both sides? Like, if scientists aren't willing to ask the questions because they've already solved for the answer, then you're not even going to have the best science. In terms of Fauci, my goodness, I mean, this is a guy who cared about one thing and one thing only and didn't understand the mental health implications of what he was doing, didn't understand the implications on children's education and how Americans would fall behind because of what he was doing, didn't understand the economic implications of what he was doing. And he didn't listen to anyone else. We know that. I mean, by the way, Rand Paul is all over this right now, and he is demanding from the Biden administration to know just exactly how much money was spent on that research over in the Wuhan lab. So we'll see whether or not he gets answers. He certainly deserves them. Anyway, you know, a lot of you guys are talking about the Trump DeSantis thing, and I see some of you love him. Some of you would like to see maybe somebody else, maybe Ron DeSantis get it. Some of you are a little upset about how he treated Kayleigh McEnany. And look, I get it. He's not perfect. I did like his policies, though, I got to say. Like, those were some of the best economic policies. But of course, you know, you had Larry Kudlow in there helping to influence that in a really positive way. You had Steve Moore as well from the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. They just came out with a study. I think Steve's going to be on Monday. They came out with a study that looked at this ESG issue and rated a number of these companies in terms of their sort of ESG friendliness and how detrimental that was and is to their overall business, which we all know, right? What do you think this whole Target thing is about? What do you think the whole Bud Light thing is about? Everybody's virtue signaling again. And that virtue signaling is actually costing them customers. So this study that was put out by this group at Committee to Unleash Prosperity, very interesting to see, because I think shareholders should know, like, hey, if this company that you're investing in cares more about what BlackRock thinks, that would be the main ESG firm, or Vanguard thinks, then about how the stock will perform in the future for you during your retirement, then you don't want to be in that stock, right? Period. Like, we can't allow our system to be remade into a socialist or totalitarian style economy, because that's what it effectively would be. If you have a group of guys, and by the way, they're all guys, I'm sorry. Like, I know they're trying their diversity thing, but they're all a bunch of guys over there that are running the place at BlackRock. And they're sitting over there saying, hey, you know, we like this company because we think that they have a green enough energy footprint, but we don't like this company because, you know, they take too many planes. By the way, you want to know how many planes BlackRock is on? You want to know how many private jets those guys take? I'd like to know their ESG footprint. Anyway, so they get to decide, like, who we're going to invest in, not based on actual revenue and sales numbers, popularity of product, but based on whether or not it fits the proper ESG portfolio. Well, that just strikes me as bizarre and not actually part of our capitalist system. I mean, hey, you can't have companies doing nutty things or crazy things or damaging the country in some way, shape, or form. I mean, we do have some expectations, but they're taking it really, really, really far. You wonder in some ways, I'm curious to get your reaction, guys. You wonder how much sort of this ESG stuff even filtered through over at Fox because of Tucker's firing and whether or not, you know, there was any kind of sort of influence from shareholders. And BlackRock, by the way, owns about maybe 5% of each class of stock there, Fox A and Fox B. Was there any influence there from shareholders or who were like, wait a second, this is not good? And by the way, he went after ESG pretty hard. You know who else went after ESG? Dan Bongino. You know who else went after ESG? Steve Hilton. You know who else went after ESG? Laura Ingraham. We're waiting Laura's fate, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing, but I'm seeing sort of a pattern here. You're not supposed to go after ESG. Mm-mm. We're going to keep going after it, by the way, right here, because I don't have to answer to any of those people telling me what I can or cannot cover. And I really do think that it puts investors, especially individual investors that are saving for their future, in a vulnerable spot. So it's good to call them out. Good indeed. Turning to Bud Light. So we go to Bud Light. Have you heard about Anheuser-Busch's former marketing executive there? Actually, let me take a few more comments from you guys before I move over to that story, because I do like hearing from you. And, oh, it's good to see my friend Seth again. Seth, welcome back to the show. Good to have you here. So many familiar faces. I do enjoy getting the chance to see all of you right here. It's a nice thing. Jigsaw, I recognize that handle. Good to see you. And of course, my friend Leslie, who I met over on Locals, because it's another platform I am on there. It's kind of we're going to start doing more there, Leslie. I need more hours in the day. But anyway, we're going to start doing some more. We have like private meetings and stuff like that over there where we can talk with one another in a less sort of grandiose style, by the way, without necessarily any algorithms as well in the way. Anyway, everybody's sort of weighing in on some of this ESG stuff, which I appreciate. Seth asking if the pool is open at the Regan household. And indeed it is. You know, I opened my pool like April 1st. I'm way ahead of the game. I crank up the heat. I'm waiting for Greta, you know, little Greta to like come and arrest me for global warming here, because you should see the steam on a cold day coming off that pool. It's actually kind of crazy, but I like to swim in a heated pool, and I try to swim every single day I can. I've often kept it open all the way through December, and I live in the Northeast, so that's saying something, right? Anyway, all of you too as well, weighing in on the Trump DeSantis thing. It looks like we have quite a few Trump fans here. Look, I think, and again, I just caution because anything could happen. And don't forget, like, there were a lot of people that were out in front last time, and it was Donald Trump who wound up winning the nomination in 2016. So it's not to say that it can't be done. I just think that Ron DeSantis has a lot of headwind against him. One, he's not as well known. Donald Trump is obviously was well known before he ever ran for president. And that was just because of television and The Apprentice, et cetera. And Ron DeSantis is not as good about getting out there and going on all the TV shows. Like, where is he? We've asked for him here. You haven't seen him yet, right? Now, a smart candidate is like, you know what? Like, I don't care. Even if she only has 65,000 followers right now. And we're growing. I'm hoping for 100,000 by July, guys. Maybe even by, I mean, if we really keep it up and you keep sharing this stuff, maybe by mid to late June. Anyway, I digress. The point being that he should be out there on every platform possible. This is actually what Donald Trump did incredibly well in 2016. You know, even if he was just calling up on the phone, he was out there in front of everyone and people already knew who he was. So in terms of Ron DeSantis, most people actually, like, he just doesn't have the same name recognition. I'm sorry. The guy just doesn't. And so what should he be doing? Again, if I were his advisor, I'd be like, hey, buddy, hang out, do your job in Florida and wait for 2028. That will be your time. Make nice with Donald Trump. He may sort of, you know, anoint you, and then you keep the party sort of in your corner and you can point to your experience in Florida. But if he said, okay, I'm going for this thing, I'd be like, get yourself on every single stinking TV show you possibly can, every podcast you possibly can. Everybody who calls up and wants you, you should be sitting there doing this stuff sort of nonstop. And he's not doing that. So I don't think he's not the people lover that Donald Trump necessarily is too. I think Donald Trump actually enjoys it, right? He likes going on TV. He likes going to rallies. He likes energy. I certainly saw that when I was at these rallies. And of course, I had friends who were advising him. And I remember one in particular telling me, like, it's so important. Like, after he got into the White House, we've got to get him out on the road again because he just loves that. Like, he loves feeding off the energy of the people. I don't think, and I could be wrong, but Ron DeSantis kind of strikes me as a bit of a shy guy. And I don't think that he feeds off the energy of those rallies or going to those coffees in New Hampshire, or coming on podcasts like this one in the same way, shape, or form. And I don't know is his people around him are doing enough of that either, because that was the other thing. Donald Trump leveraged his team. He had a ton of people that would go on all the shows all the time, and they would talk about him if he couldn't actually do it. So the infrastructure there around the DeSantis campaign is lacking, but I think it's actually the candidate himself that is going to have to do a lot to kind of get the energy level up, to prove to people that he really enjoys being with people and he enjoys campaigning and he enjoys, you know, being on television shows and talking to hosts and answering the tough questions and, you know, having a good time, right? That's the other part. Like, can the guy have a good time? We'll see. I'm, again, looking at some of these notes from you. You know, very, very interesting. Forgive me if you're listening again on the podcast, because I got to take a moment to just read some of your comments, which I certainly appreciate. And Cigar Texan saying that you like DeSantis a lot, but just not for president, which is interesting. And, you know, people in Florida keep telling me they love him in Florida. They're like, what are you doing to us? Like, why are you going to leave? They're not too appreciative of that. So that's an ongoing issue. All right, let's turn to Bud Light, shall we? Because, well, Bud Light is just going to go down in history as perhaps the worst marketing error ever. And Alyssa Schneiderhide, she was caught by the Daily Mail on the streets of New York City outside her apartment the other day. And she was asked, you know, whether she had any comments on everything that's happening. Don't forget the stock. Anheuser-Busch, the stock, AB InBev, traded under ticker symbol BUD, Bud. It's lost $26 billion in market cap since this whole Dylan Mulvaney disaster. incredible. And, you know, whether she likes it or not, it's kind of on her. The Harvard girl who doesn't understand marketing 101, as in do not completely alienate all of your customers single-handedly in one shot. Funny that Lori Lightfoot is going to go teach at Harvard, right? We'll get to that in a second. But anyway, first back to Alyssa Heinerschneid. $26 billion loss at the company, and she's asked, you know, does she have a comment or anything? And her friend intervened and said she can't comment. Interesting. She can't comment. She's suing him? I mean, she might be. Right? I mean, look, in fairness, it's quite possible. All right, let me just be, because I'm a nice person. In fairness, look, it's quite possible that the reality of this one was that Alyssa was told by management, here are your talking points. We can't be the fratty beer anymore. We need to make sure we're different. And so she was told all these things, and these were her talking points. For all we know, and I have no idea, but for all we know, somebody arranged her little podcast thing. Remember the podcast thing where she talked about how she needed to change the brand? Can we watch again just for fun?
I'm a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. I had a really clear job to do when I took over Bud Light. And it was, this brand is in decline. It's been in decline for a really long time. And if we do not attract young drinkers to come and drink this brand, there will be no future for Bud Light. So I had this super clear mandate. It's like, we need to evolve and elevate this incredibly iconic brand. And my, what I brought to that was a belief in, okay, what does evolve and elevate mean? It means inclusivity. It means shifting the tone. It means having a campaign that's truly inclusive and feels lighter and brighter and different and appeals to women and to men. Mm-hmm. And representation is at sort of the heart of evolution. You've got to see people who reflect you in the work. And we had this hangover. I mean, Bud Light had been kind of a brand of...
Whoa. How did I do that? Let's listen to the rest.
I'm a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. I had a really clear job to do when I took over Bud Light. I mean, Bud Light had been kind of a brand of fratty, kind of out of touch humor. And it was really important that we had another approach.
Okay. So she wanted that other approach, which is how she wound up with, well, the infamous.
Oh, I'm a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. I had a really clear job
to
do.
That didn't work out so well for her, now did it? And, but again, back to why she can't comment. It's not that she doesn't have a comment. It's that she, quote, can't comment, which makes me think like something's going on there, because she might say, hey, listen, you guys gave me this mandate. These were my talking points. Maybe she didn't, for all you know, maybe she had emails saying, I don't agree with this, you know, but okay, whatever. So she's got this mandate, and this is why I'm getting at the CEO of the company. I think the CEO ultimately is responsible here. And like, he's trying to pin it on her. He's trying to pin it on the other guy, her boss. Then he's trying to like say, oh, it's just misinformation. And really it was just one campaign, one influencer, et cetera. I think he actually is ultimately going to be in jeopardy here. But so if her directive was, okay, this is what you got to do, and she's following orders, and they book her on a podcast, which I'd be surprised that they would do, but who knows? And she goes on the podcast, she does all this. And then, you know, she goes out and hires, by the way, maybe she didn't, you know, she hired the marketing agency, et cetera. Maybe it was a marketing agency that they had been using forever that the CEO loved, who the heck knows. And then all of a sudden you have the Dylan Mulvaney skit that comes out. And sure enough, like the world goes insane, understandably so, because they've just completely insulted the beer. And you combine that with the podcast excerpt and you got a lot of trouble. And so I wonder, when she said her friend said she can't comment, is she suing Anheuser-Busch and will she have a case there? That will be interesting to see. I mean, she certainly made some errors, but it's entirely possible that these were errors that were actually higher up, right? By the CEO even. And you have to ask, is she the one paying the price? I think ultimately, like he's probably going to have to go. I don't know how you preside over an organization that's losing $26 billion worth of market cap. I mean, if I'm a shareholder, I'm like, hey, you know what? No can do. I need new management, and you better retire that Bud Light brand ASAP. Name it something else. You can keep your factories. Come up with a new beer or something. Maybe it even has the same taste, although people will probably figure that out, so it may not work. But these are all real things. Real things. I'm going to move on to Target in just a second, but wow. I mean, I think you just, there's one takeaway here and one takeaway only. Don't try and outthink your customer. Know who your customer is. Respect your customer. And make sure you continue to cater to that customer, even if you're trying to bring in a new audience. This doesn't need to be taught at Harvard, thank you very much. This should just be kind of obvious and, frankly, a lot of common sense. But look, people lack common sense. This is what we're seeing over and over again. I mean, the pride thing at Target, again, a total lack of common sense. It's amazing. And even Bud Light, like, they just doubled down. They gave out $200,000 to it, an LGBTQ community thing, a business fund, because they're trying to say sorry, right? Like, you can't say sorry enough. At some point, you just have to have a position and you stick to it, because the truth is you're never going to make everyone happy. But you try to at least thread the needle so that you don't totally, you know what, off your, to use a political term, constituents. I mean, it reminds me of what's going on over at Fox News, right? They just keep shedding shows and shedding talent that people actually really liked and related to. And so how do you move an organization forward like that if you've alienated your customer base so extraordinarily? It's going to be problematic. So I'm looking at your comments again, and one of you is making a very interesting point on this poor Dylan Mulvaney, who seems quite confused enough to possibly not really know I don't know. I'm confused by this. I'm actually going to try and pull this up and see if I can show you what he's saying these days about wanting to have children. And I'm not really sure how this one's going to work. Maybe you guys could tell me. have you seen this clip? This is just great. He's sort of trying to say, listen, you know, let's see if we can get it. I think I can. Hang on. Maybe not. Maybe not. Let's see.
So I recently told my parents that I may be a little bit romantically interested in women. And that was a big shock for them, considering the past 10 years of coming out as gay, then queer, then non-binary, then trans. And I think it was just a bit of a shock. So I tell my dad, and he goes, well, I would love to see you get a woman pregnant. And I said, oh, no. She would be getting me.
Oh, how did it stop? I didn't do that. Somehow the clip stopped, but you get the gist of it. No. She would be getting me pregnant, he said. Are you confused? You know, I'm sick of being confused. I mean, it's like the Eric Carnell, who actually, I guess, was born a woman. This is the designer who is accused of being a Satanist, although he now says, I'm not, even though he designed a whole bunch of products that effectively worship Satan, but he was biologically born female, but now identifies as male. But I can't remember, like, which side he likes. I mean, it'll twist you in knots. And no wonder the BBC had, what, 200 genders that they had to come out with? Because, you know, it keeps going around and around and around in circles, which is just unnecessarily confusing, to say it nicely, right? Anyway, Dylan Mulvaney, what do you guys think? Yeah, John, he wants to get pregnant. Let me just say, like, for the record, there are still some things that us ladies can do, and only we can do. And that includes having children. So there you go. You can try all you want, Dylan, but I'm sorry. We kind of get that lane cornered. Looking at Target right now, again, this is a company that increasingly is struggling. I'm just looking at the share price today. You know, it's lost, had about 10 days of losses. Now, the market's up overall right now because, well, we got a debt deal done. Hey, I told you it would happen. I told you. Anyway, Target's trading up a little bit, about 1.39%, $132.99 a share. Keep in mind, it was at $160 before this entire ordeal began. And it's also got some other trouble, right? Like its theft is through the roof, $500 million and still counting. In the latest year, the CEO says they lost thanks to all that theft. And then, oh, what else you have? You have other problems like people not wanting all these discretionary items. The discretionary items account for some 54% of their sales. And you know what? People are kind of hurting and inflation is bad. So they're not buying as much discretionary sort of useless stuff over at Target. So consequently, the company is certainly facing certain challenges. And then there came this whammy. I showed you guys this yesterday, but it's just still fun to watch. Yeah, yeah. Attention all shoppers, attention all shoppers. Yeah, yeah. There's a cleanup on every aisle. Yeah, yeah. Target is targeting your kids. Yeah. They put a target on my back, but they target. I can't play too much because, you know, they have certain rules around that, of course. And you can go check it out on iTunes. But it's funny. They put a target on my back. They put a target on your kids, et cetera. That's how the lyrics go. Went all the way to number one on iTunes. And I'm sure that the CEO is like, you got to be kidding me. Like, how has this happened? How has this happened? How has this happened? I'll tell you how it's happened. Because you guys didn't learn a darn thing from Bud Light. I mean, Bud Light should be the new case study at Harvard's business school. By the way, the AB InBev guy, the CEO, he went to Harvard too. I'm seeing a pattern. We still haven't talked about Lori Lightfoot, but I'm seeing a pattern. All right, you can have all the education in the world, but it does not make up for common sense. Thank you very much. So Target continuing its struggles as well. I mean, just wild, right? And this, it all goes back to this ESG stuff. I actually think that this ESG stuff is going to be the largest sort of threat to our capitalist system that we've seen in a very long time, because it's effectively cancel culture for businesses. And you don't hear about it, right? Because they're controlling so much money. Some $14 billion under asset management is the last I checked what BlackRock has. And of course, Vanguard is huge as well, and some of these other large firms. And it's like, okay, we can only invest in these things because they agree with the policies that we believe in. And so you don't hear about it as an individual shareholder. You're just, you know, looking at your 401k saying, oh, well, that fund did well, that fund didn't do well. And you don't actually know the nitty gritty of what's going on, how the sausage is made effectively behind the scenes. And so this has been happening. And all these companies are like, oh, we have to prove that we are worthy, right? We have to prove that we can get our CEI rating and our DEI rating and our ESG rating. And all of this just needs to be perfect, which is why I'm glad that the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, led by Steve Moore and some other really smart people, they're actually now putting other kinds of ratings on companies where they're saying, okay, you're spending too much time focusing on this BS, and you really need to actually just focus on your core business. That's what matters. And so Target is so focused on its Pride Month. And look, hey, you know what? Okay, I get it. Like, they're trying to expand their audience and they figure, you know, this portion of the population is gay. And by the way, we want to teach compassion, this, that, and the other. But when you go so far as to not bother vetting some of the candidates that are designing your stuff and you wind up with a situation such as the one they had, well, then it just keeps getting worse. So that puts us in a position of thinking about, again, why there is this sort of totalitarian style of government that's out there right now. Why does this keep happening? And does it have anything to do with what we saw, for example, during March 2020? And then in the aftermath going into the election, where everybody wanted to hate on Trump and there was no way that he could win. And then, of course, the January 6th thing not helping, because then all of a sudden they were able to paint half the country as total radicals that wanted to take over the government. And now I worry, because if you've seen new studies, they're talking about, by the way, I do have worries about AI. So I'm not saying this within a vacuum or even within a political context, but I am pointing out how dangerous this could all go. There is an AI study that just came out by the people that are sort of inventing this. And they're saying, look, this could be really bad. It could actually destroy humanity. Joe Biden talked about it moments before he fell down, of course, at the Air Force Academy just yesterday.
I met in the Oval Office, in my office, with 8 leading scientists in the area of AI. Some are very worried that AI can actually overtake human thinking and planning. So we got a lot to deal with.
Yeah. You do have a lot to deal with. The question is, how do you deal with it? Do you say, okay, I'm just going to shut down all those people that want to see, for example, like I did, the study on the vaccines out by Oxford University suggesting something in a very, very minor part of the population, which, by the way, I deserve to be able to read? Do you really want to control everything that I see and everything that I think? That's the question. And might you actually do this for political purposes? Because we are going into an election year. We saw what they did before. We saw that they lied through their teeth. Even though the FBI was conducting an investigation into the Hunter Biden laptop, you had 51 ex-spies led by the former deputy at the CIA, Mike Morrell, who says he was put up to it by our current Secretary of State, who was then an advisor for the Biden campaign. That would be Antony Blinken. 51 of these guys came forward and signed this thing, put the letter into Politico, and all of a sudden, oh, you couldn't talk about the laptop anymore. No way. I mean, look, the laptop, frankly, is kind of neither here nor there, except that if there was any proof that there was any pay-to-play type of scheme having gone on, and this is what we're hearing now, of course, from many members in Congress, and they're demanding more by way of the Treasury Department and FBI, et cetera, in terms of documentation about any research that was done into some of this. If there was any there, then that deserved, right, to be heard. And journalists deserve the opportunity to explore that. But when you go out there and you say, oh, it's just misinformation, you convince the tech community to shut it all down and people can't actually see what's happening, well, that's pretty darn frightening. And who's to say it couldn't happen all over again, especially when John Kirby, you know, is out there warning about these national security issues as we go into 2024. He's one of the spokespeople over there in the Biden administration. I'm going to play for you what he had to say. I promised to do that yesterday. Remember, I couldn't get it up, but here we go. Here is John Kirby telling us what a threat Russia is going to be all over again.
It should come as no surprise to anybody that that Mr. Putin would show an interest in making it hard for President Biden to win election and to try to interfere in his ability to govern as President of the United States.
Mm-hmm. So there's fear out there. There's fear about AI. They're playing into it. I mean, I'm not going to discount the fear. I actually think that AI, and I've got a special show coming up actually later today or over the weekend on that specifically for you all, where we're gonna spend about an hour looking at the challenges of AI, the dangers of it, as well as the threat of, does one side get shut down? Is history written by those that are trying to control the narrative right now? And are they able to do so in increasingly creative ways? Again, that show. So make sure you are subscribed and that you do hit the bell, because that'll be coming out shortly. Anyway, I think about what Neil Gorsuch wrote in terms of fear, effectively saying that fear gripped our society. This is the Supreme Court justice who came out with a statement the other day talking about all the things that happened in the aftermath of March 2020 and all the mistakes that were made. And it was all done because of fear. And it's so interesting how quickly big government can take over and people are like, okay, right? Because in the face of that fear, they're just looking for strong leadership and the whoa, 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 we'll just go in line, whatever you say, whatever you say. And so if you didn't do whatever they said, if you dared to, you know, go to a church meeting, for goodness sakes, you were threatened with arrest. And it's very fascinating how such a free and liberal society in that sense, and I say that in the freedom sense, can go from having those freedoms to suddenly not having any of those freedoms and having those freedoms be designated only for certain people and certain companies. I mean, to think that Home Depot or Walmart could be open, but you know, your local shop could not be. Well, I say this within the context of letting you all know that there is a new head of the CDC coming in. This is a woman out of North Carolina, and she basically is a Fauci sycophant, and she just loves Fauci, right? Like this is her hero, Mary. Hang on, I'm going to get her name. She is a doctor. She's out in North Carolina. She's from the health department there. There's a great photo of her actually during those dark days of those lockdowns where she's wearing a mask and the mask had Fauci's picture on it. Hey, by the way, has everybody like totally forgotten that Fauci was the one saying, no, you don't need a mask? Remember the 60 Minutes interview? And he just lied through his teeth and said, you don't need a mask, because he was worried. He was worried that you might actually have a run on those masks. And so he's, you know, again, effectively sort of trying to play God, like manipulating the American people, not telling them the truth, telling them what he wants them to think, what he wants them to believe, because it's in his interest to do so. So anyway, we get this new head of the CDC, and she is a diehard Fauci fan. And that, I would just say, is once again troubling, because I think it's quite clear, is it not, that Fauci proved how much power one could really have, without a doubt. I mean, this was a time where he was all that mattered, and he never thought about anyone else or any other angle. It was just his way or the highway. And that kind of totalitarian style is something that, frankly, I would never want to see us repeat. And yet, Neil Gorsuch saying that should be the biggest takeaway of what we went through during those challenging times, because you cannot just completely dismiss the personal liberties of individuals when faced with such fear. Her name again is Mandy. Forgive me, it's Mandy Cohen. So she's out of North Carolina. She was the health director there, and she was the sort of right hand to the governor, who was all about lockdowns. That would be Roy Cooper there in North Carolina. So they were locking down everyone, and she had a history of really kind of overreaching. For example, she at one point threatened a county school board with legal action if it didn't impose quarantines, masking, and case reporting policies immediately. So it was like, okay, do this or else. And they kind of were like all on power trips. Like, it was really annoying, right? And not just annoying, but tragic, because when you think of the losses that we suffered overall as a society, I mean, there were people who were not able to get the proper preventative care that they needed for their medical treatment, and many died because they didn't go in for simple stuff that they would have otherwise gone in for. We made massive mistakes. I mean, just look at what Cuomo did in New York with the act of sending in COVID patients into nursing homes. I mean, it's incomprehensible, frankly. And I don't think anybody really cared. They just were doing something just to do something, to look as though they were in charge. And it got really ugly. And so I credit Neil Gorsuch for recognizing it with such clarity the danger of fear and the need, I guess, for some kind of authoritarian style, the willingness, right? He said this. He's like, it's amazing because Congress didn't call them out. Nobody called them out in the beginning. Oh, yours truly. Yours truly did, right? That may be why I'm no longer at Fox. Anyway, I absolutely did. I absolutely did. And I stand by that to this day, because you have to be logical about these things. And you needed a strong economy in order to fight that thing. And you needed to make sure that kids were not damaged, frankly, in the way that they have been. I mean, you get a generation that lost out. So tough times. And now we're like putting a woman in who's all about those lockdowns. She's totally, you know, there's a woman who was all about lockdowns too. That would be for everybody else except for her. I'm talking about Lori Lightfoot, the former mayor of Chicago. Disaster in Chicago. I mean, it's just horrible. It's one of the most dangerous places in the country now because of all the violence. And she went through this whole lockdown thing, and she was very adamant about it, very totalitarian-like, except, of course, when it came to her. So she went out, she told the Chicago Tribune, hey, like, you know what? You don't need to get your roots done. That would be hair dye for, you know, us ladies that want to keep looking good. She said, you don't need to get your roots done. But then it turned out there was a hairdresser that came to her house and cut her hair and posted it on Facebook. So everybody's like, whoa, what's this? And so she was asked about it. Here's what she had to say.
Social distancing, washing your hands, staying at home. But I, as a elected official in the public face of the city, need to make sure that I am out there and visible through this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, I'm Lori Lightfoot. I'm the face of Chicago. I gotta look good. I need my hair cut. You can't get your hair cut. None of you hairdressers can stay open, but my friend over there, yeah, she can cut my hair. you understand the hypocrisy of it all. I mean, it was really an unusual moment in time. And I think Neil Gorsuch is right. We need to make sure that that never, ever gets repeated, which means I'm going to bring you back to where I grew up in New Hampshire. Live free or die, New Hampshire. By the way, these are on my Facebook page. I have a store on my Facebook page because you guys keep asking me, and they are there. I'll try and send out, you know, and I'll send out a link so you can see specifically this particular cup. But I grew up in New Hampshire where we really, like, both sides, by the way, Democrats and Republicans, we kept government on a short leash. The belief was we elected our governors, still do, every 2 years because you don't want them to get too, you know, too happy in there for 4 years. And we had term limits, and the whole idea is you've got to have a small government. And actually both sides agree on this. It's a small little state, you know, kind of homogeneous in some respects. And maybe they kind of just all buy into that small kind of libertarian feel, even on both sides. I mean, it's changing because we get, you know, the mass holes coming up more and more. I guess good deals there in New Hampshire. No state income tax, no sales tax, and no capital gains. I mean, it's like it's perfect, right? So you can imagine it's becoming more and more sought after. And I think increasingly we've seen tending to go more blue, perhaps because of some of those influences. But at least as a kid, like I always knew, like, yeah, you know, you keep government on a short leash because when they get too big, they have too much control. And that's what we forgot during that difficult, difficult time. And hopefully we never forget it again, at least not in this generation. At least for all of us and for all of our kids, we'll remember what that was like. And we need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And that's why 2024 is pretty darn important, is it not? Great to see you all. Again, remember to subscribe. Remember to hit the bell because I will have that program later today, all on AI, all on big tech. And I'd love for you to listen in. So that'll be coming either later today or over the weekend. Important stuff for all of us to hear. It is great to see you again, as always. Again, hey, before I go, I'm getting distracted because I get so much going on in my computer. I do just actually want to take one more quick look at some of your notes here because Leslie, great to see you. Thank you. Thanks. I think I was spot on too back in March 2020, when I was one of the very few people that was, I wouldn't even call it brave. Like, I wasn't being brave. I just have a bad habit of saying exactly what I think. Like, it just is what it is, right? Like, and so it doesn't always fall in line with one party or another. In fact, at that point, like, I certainly was not in line with the Trump administration. I mean, I thought it was the worst thing he could do in terms of calling this like national emergency and wanting this like national lockdown. I thought there were precautions you should take. I mean, you should secure the borders, shouldn't have people coming in from China. Like that stuff was kind of obvious, but to actually terrify people the way they did, that's what made me so angry. I'm looking at the stock market, it's down 2,000 points. Are you people kidding me? Like, you need to be able to digest this, like protect who needs to be protected, but don't put the country into such a state of fear and paralysis, which is exactly what they did. And I warned at the time that it would become political. I mean, it was political, right? And I think that sadly, there are those on the left that saw that as their opportunity. And it was their opportunity to really kind of, you know, pin it down on Trump and ensure that he would not get another 4 years. And so they were using it for all it was worth. And I don't necessarily consider it brave. I think it was just sort of, it is who I am. And I will just kind of always tell you what I think. And sometimes you'll agree, sometimes you won't agree, but I'll still say it. You know, that it's one of the things that Trump has his downsides as well. Like, I'm not naive about any of this. And I think that while I liked his policy, he had some other challenges, of course. But one of the things I did appreciate about the guy was he had a hard time sort of spinning stuff too. I mean, I guess if he had his own particular spin, he would deliver that. But when they'd ask him questions, this is what always amazed me because I've interviewed so many politicians in my career and I like Mike Pence a lot. I think he's a very nice man, but wow, like he'd be so programmed. Like he'd always, it's very hard to break through and you'd go back and ask the question in a different way, whatever. And he had his talking point and he was very good at just staying on the talking point. And that's typically how they are, right? Mitt Romney, same way. Bill Clinton was a little bit better. I remember interviewing him at one of those CGI events, Clinton Global Initiative. It was for the Americas in Chicago. And he had his spiel, of course, but he would occasionally deviate. And I value that in politicians, in that I think you need to kind of be real. And Donald Trump was very real in that sense. And he literally answered the questions and said exactly what he thought. So you won't forget when he dared to say that actually maybe he had seen some intelligence when he was asked about the origins of the virus. He had seen some intelligence that indicated that it might have come from a lab in China. Well, he said that and all H-E-L-L broke loose. Like, people went nuts. And the truth is, he had seen intelligence. By the way, I myself had people deep enough within the government and sources there, for example, that knew the China situation well and were watching all of this. And I myself had heard as far back as February that it likely came from this lab in China. Now, we still haven't fully run that down, and there's differences within the intelligence departments of the United States, with some people thinking one thing, some people thinking another thing, and probably some people just having to, you know, kind of keep neutrality of some sort because they can't really tell you what they think. But I had certainly heard this, and I actually, was interested when the reporter asked the question to him. And he admitted that, yeah, some people have presented that evidence to him. And, you know, we don't really know, but that's out there. And wow, I mean, they just went bonkers. And that was sort of the beginning of the end. And they accused him of lying and this, that, and the other. And so it's tough to realize that the system is so rigged. And you can't be as truthful or honest. Perhaps, I guess as a politician, you have to be careful and there's various issues at stake. But I think he actually was probably trying to send a message to China that we were on to them. And he was probably just, once again, being truthful. I don't think it was classified information at the time. I'd have to double check that. But he definitely made everybody absolutely positively furious. So, yes, truth is what you're going to get here. Always, whether you like it or not, or anybody upstairs likes it or not. Okay. Hey, listen, again, it's wonderful to see you, Dee. Great to have you here. Oh, you've watched me on Facebook. So great to see you over here. I'm thrilled that you are a new subscriber. You can help us do our part because I'm here every day, like at least 5 days a week. Sometimes I even pop up on the weekends. We're trying to get like a regular time. And so I'll work on that. But I love that you're a subscriber. I appreciate that, Dee. And again, just spread the word, share the clips. We'll have a lot more clips that will come out later in the day. Some of you have said, oh, well, why does it say live when the clips come out? And that's just a technical thing, unfortunately. This show that you are watching is live right now in the moment, but the clips are a little different. But I love having, oh my gosh, Mike O'Donnell telling me I got 68,000 subs. Really? I thought it was like 65 last time I looked. So 68,000 is terrific. Peter is a fan from Fox Business. Ah, oh, that's so good. I love hearing what you said. I'll share Peter's message. He said, I still watch a few folks at Fox and that don't appear to be the sellouts. And he said, I love watching you here on YouTube and on Rumble. I love your fresh take. That means a lot to me, really. Thank you. People have said that to me in the past. Like, it's a fresh take. And I'm like, fresh, you know, I don't know. It's just authentic, I think, and it's just me. And for whatever reason in this crazy media business, and again, at networks, having worked at so many, like I know how it goes. Like there's sort of, you know, a spiel and stuff gets written into a prompter. I'll give you guys a little secret. You know, I actually very rarely ever, certainly in my 8 p.m. Trish Regan primetime show, ever had producers writing copy in the intro. I often would have them write teases. I used to have a great tease writer, and there's a whole art in television to tease writing. See, I just give it all away. I'm like, here you go. Here's what I think. But you know, you're supposed to like, and you know, kind of like hint at stuff. And you know, I'm kind of an open book. So I let someone else do the tease writing, but I always would write all of the scripts because it had to be me. It had to be my voice. And right now I'm psyched because there are no scripts. So I don't have to worry about it. And it's kind of just a better way to go. But people said that. They're like, oh, it's a fresh take. And I'm like, all right. You know, I think it's just, it's a fair take. It's an honest take. And it's a take I come at with a lot of emphasis on the economic fundamentals for the health of our country long term. I have kind of a hawkish stance, although I don't want us to actually engage in a lot of this military action, but I'm a big believer in making sure that we're prepared and that we have the proper military force in action should we need to use it. But simultaneously, heck, you know, there's a lot you can do on the economic front. Sanctions. It's another thing I liked about Trump. He actually understood how to use quote unquote financial weapons, because why don't we use all the financial weapons we have? Why do we actually have to put people in danger? Like, I know financial weapons have an effect on people's lives, all right? Look, we sanctioned Venezuela, and sure enough, you know, the economy's a mess and people are sort of starving, although I'd argue in part that's the administration's fault down there. But, it, you know, look, it does have an effect, right? And when you sanction these countries, it often hurts the people more than the actual leaders. But at least there's, like, no bombs going off. I opened the Wall Street Journal today, and the front page on the print edition is this woman sobbing because her daughter had been killed by these blasts and these drones. And, you know, I just looked at that and I'm so saddened by it all. If there was a diplomatic solution in some way, shape or form, like, why didn't we use it? And if we're going to be in this, like, why are we still in it? It keeps going on and on and on. And given that we are the United States of America and we're the ones supporting Zelensky, why haven't we equipped him with a proper way to actually win this thing? Because the sooner it ends, the more lives you will save. And that's just a hard thing, I think, as an individual to see. I think about what happened in Afghanistan, where I literally was crying. Like, you know, my family's like, are you okay? I just started sobbing because you saw the situation those people were being put in. And sometimes I think government gets so sort of big picture, big government getting big picture, that they forget about the individual lives that are at stake and the individuals, the souls that are being affected by all this. And that applies to what we're doing on the military front. It applies to also what we're doing even on the economic front with the Federal Reserve, you know, not seemingly caring. Like, they were so desperate to make sure our economy was doing great that they just kept printing money, and Congress did the same thing. And consequently, we wound up with insane inflation that I just don't know how we're going to get out of in the foreseeable future. So again, it's a very honest take, and hopefully a very fair take, and hopefully a very rational take, because we're definitely missing rational these days. Again, just great to have you all here. I appreciate it. David Martinez, welcome. Lalo, welcome. Bob Dennison, I don't want to raise taxes. Thank you very much. That's not the way to do it. If you subscribe and listen to this channel, you'll know lower taxes equals success. We had the most GDP growth, actually, in recent history under Donald Trump, who cut taxes, by the way. Most middle income growth as well. So there's ways to do it, better ways. Great to see you guys.